Can I see the warrant? I will let go when you show me the judicial warrant. Where is it?
You don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens asking for a judicial warrant.
Well, we'll see what authority they have, what authority they take, what authority they put us all under.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com with, surprise, surprise, another busy news day in these United States. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
We have been restructuring the show up to the very second, the very last minute here, so let's find out what happens next, shall
Such
we?
Such is life in the Trump era.
Apparently so. Let's start here after the tragic news over the past weekend in the U.S., as we covered in some detail on yesterday's program, days after Minnesota's Democratic State Rep Melissa Hortman and her husband were killed, and Democratic State Senator John Hoffman and his wife were critically injured by a Trump supporter in what officials are describing as a, quote, politically motivated assassination, President Donald Trump said on Tuesday that he would not call the state's Democratic governor, eschewing a traditional presidential response to such tragedies, NBC News reports today. Quote, why would I call him? I could call and say, hi, how you doing? The guy doesn't have a clue, Trump said, referring to Minnesota's Democratic governor, Tim Walz, who was the vice presidential contender facing off against Trump's ticket in 2024. Trump added, quote, he's a mess. So I could be nice and call, but why waste time? Said Trump, who is a, whatever word or phrase you just filled in right there, will do just fine.
How about classless jerk?
There's that.
And also to note that in the amount of time that he's taken to deny that he's going to call Walz, he could have just called Walz like a normal person and been decent.
Well, he's not a normal or decent person, is he?
Nope.
Presidents, of course, at least grown-up, not insane, sociopathic, narcissistic ones in any event, have historically called state and local politicians on both sides of the aisle to lend support in the aftermath of violent tragedies like natural disasters or high-profile shootings. Reached for comment on Trump's remarks, a Walz spokesperson said, quote, Tim Walz, quote, wishes that President Trump would be a president for all Americans. But this tragedy isn't about Trump or Walz, he said. It's about the Hortman family, the Hoffman family, the state of Minnesota, and the governor remains focused on helping all three heal. Former President Joe Biden did call Walz after the attack. Such outreach is traditional for presidents, NBC notes, after then-Rep. Gabby Giffords, an Arizona Democrat, was shot in 2011. Then-President Barack Obama called the state's Republican governor, Jan Brewer, to offer, quote, the full resources of the federal government. Republican President George W. Bush called then-Democratic Governor Tim Kaine of Virginia after more than 30 people died in the 2007 Virginia Tech mass shooting. In 2024, Georgia's Republican Governor Brian Kemp recalled that President Biden called to offer support after Hurricane Helene, noting that he appreciated Biden telling him to call directly if he needed anything. Biden also called Trump himself to check on his condition after last year's assassination attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania. In the hours after the assassination attempt on Trump, Governor Walz also publicly denounced the attack, saying on social media at the time that, quote, violence has no place in American politics, adding, quote, praying for the safety of former President Trump and everyone at his rally in Pennsylvania. But Trump says he won't be calling walls after a leading state lawmaker and her husband were killed, another and his wife were critically injured, shot 9 times and 8 times, respectively. And after it was discovered that the shooter, who had attended Trump rallies and was reportedly a big fan, had a manifesto in his car listing some 45 other elected officials, including U.S. senators, all Democrats, who appeared to be on his target list. But because Donald Trump is a classless, whatever word or phrase you just inserted there, if he was only classless, he wouldn't, you know, be much of a problem. But he's also a racist who seeks to ethnically cleanse the U.S. So I got a problem with that, too. Yes, I said ethnically cleanse, because that is the very definition of the far right code word remigration, which Donald Trump called for. While he didn't have time to call the governor of Minnesota, he had time to post a long, rambling tantrum of a social media post on Sunday night using that word. But it is not just Donald Trump using that word. His own State Department recently sent notice to Congress of their intention to restructure the department under so-called a Department of Remigration. Anyway, much more on that shortly, as we will be joined by Wired's David Gilbert for the full story that is really, I think, being underreported right now by the bulk of the corporate mainstream media, distracted by Trump's classlessness in everything else. A few more items here. First, last week we detailed MyPillow CEO and 2020 election conspiracy theorist Mike Lindell's trial, then underway in Denver in the lawsuit against him by former Dominion Voting System executive Eric Coomer, who Lindell joined, apparently, in claiming after the 2020 election that he was somehow responsible for stealing it from Donald Trump. There were claims at the time that Coomer was heard taking part in an Antifa organizational phone call, which they do not have, to my knowledge, claiming that he or Dominion was rigging the election to steal it from Donald Trump. All utter stuff and nonsense. But Lindell has been living on such nonsense since at least 2020 and the election, and he is now facing the music for at least some of it. A federal jury in Colorado on Monday, as AP reports today, found that one of the nation's most prominent election conspiracy theorists, MyPillow founder Mike Lindell, defamed a former Dominion employee after the 2020 election. The jury found that two of Lindell's statements about Eric Coomer, the former security and product strategy director at the Denver-based Dominion Voting Systems, including calling him a traitor, were in fact defamatory. It ordered Lindell and his online media platform, formerly known as Frank Speech, now known as Lindell TV, to pay Coomer $2.3 million in damages, even though that was far less than the $62 million that Coomer had asked for to help send a message to discourage attacks on election workers. Lindell said he would appeal the financial award. He stuck by his false claims that the 2020 election was stolen during the trial, but he did not call any experts to present evidence of his claims. Because who would actually do that? And it's, of course, strange that there were no experts to bring forward, because Lindell has claimed that he was going to do exactly that. If any of his election lawsuits, mostly those filed against him, it seems, ever saw the light of day in a courtroom, he would present evidence of the stolen election. Well, they didn't. And he didn't, because he can't, because he has no such evidence. One of Coomer's attorneys, Charles Kane, faulted Lindell for being, quote, all hat, no cattle, unquote. Even though the damage award was smaller than he had asked for, Kane said he thought it would still send a message that people who work behind the scenes of elections should not be attacked. But he said Coomer, who has received death threats, is, quote, still going to be looking over his shoulder. Dominion voting machines became the target of elaborate conspiracy theories among allies of President Trump, who continues to this day to falsely claim that his loss to Democrat Joe Biden was due to widespread fraud, though he, like Lindell, has never offered any evidence to prove any such thing. Dominion itself, meanwhile, you may recall, won a $787 million settlement, more than a quarter of $1 billion in a defamation lawsuit they filed against Fox News over its airing of false claims against the company. They also have another lawsuit still pending against the right-wing pro-Trump Newsmax outlet. For their part, Newsmax apologized, at least to Coomer, in 2021 for airing the false allegations against him, the same ones that dumb Lindell never apologized for. Coomer said during the two-week Lindell trial that his career and life were destroyed by the statements. He said conspiracy theories cost him his job, his mental health, and the life that he had built. And he said that Lindell's statements were the most distressing of them all. He specifically pointed to a statement in May of 2021, when Lindell described what he believed Coomer had done as, quote, treason. His lawyer said Lindell either knew the statements were lies or conveyed them recklessly without knowing if they were true. On the stand, in fact, Lindell stood by his claims, allowing his attorneys to argue that, well, whether those claims were true or not doesn't actually matter because Lindell believed them to be true, which was enough to avoid liability for defamation. While that did not work for at least two of Lindell's claims in this case, it did work for for eight other statements, as the jury has concluded. Lindell denied making any statements that he knew to be false about Coomer. He testified that he has called many people traitors. Well, then I guess that makes it okay. His lawyers argued the statements were about a matter of public concern, elections. Therefore, they were protected by the First Amendment. But Coomer's lawyers said the statements crossed the line into defamation because Lindell accused Coomer of treason, which is, of course, a crime. For his part, Lindell claimed that he used to be worth $60 million before he started speaking out about 2020 and that he is now $10 million in debt. He said he never accused Coomer of rigging the election, but he did say that he was upset because he said Newsmax blocked him from being able to talk on air about voting machines after they had apologized to Coomer. Coomer denied there was any such deal to block Lindell under his agreement with the network. And one other of Donald Trump's conspiracy theorist losers is also facing the music today a little bit. A California judicial panel has upheld a recommendation that attorney John Eastman, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Should be stripped of his law license for his efforts to overturn the results of the presidential election on behalf of Donald Trump. He was one of Trump's top attorneys in the failed 2020 fake elector scheme to try and steal the election from Biden, including Eastman's big part was telling then Vice President Mike Pence that it was totally legal for him to refuse to accept electoral votes from several swing states when Congress convened to certify the 2020 vote count in January 6th of 2021. The Friday ruling from the State Bar Court of California Appeals Division tees up Eastman's case for a final review by the California Supreme Court, which has final say on attorney disciplinary matters in the state. Eastman violated California attorney ethics rules against misleading courts and making false public statements, according to the Bar Court's review department. A judge on California State Bar Court recommended Eastman's disbarment. Back in March of 24, Eastman's license was suspended after he was recommended for disbarment. Separately, he has been indicted in Arizona and Georgia state courts for his efforts to try to overturn Biden's election victory in those states. He's pleaded not guilty in both cases. The 2020 election that never ends because Trump never stops lying about it and still is, even while others if not him, chumps and dupes and patsies and suckers, though they may be, continue to pay the price for Donald Trump's lies. And one more before we take a break and come back with our guest. Prosecutors with the Department of Homeland Security have now recently surprised a number of migrants by dismissing their cases when they appear in court. Well, that seems nice. Well, it's not nice. This is a legal tactic that apparently then opens the door for ICE agents to be able to just arrest them in the courthouse hallways once they leave the courtroom and place them into expedited deportation proceedings without any hearings, and apparently in many cases without an attorney. It's incredibly sleazy, but that is the latest sleazy tactic now being carried out by ICE agents in Trump's re-migration roundups. Several Democratic politicians, including members of Congress, have shown up at immigration courthouses in recent days to protest this new tactic. Well, after recent arrests of Democratic elected officials, a state judge, a New Jersey mayor, a U.S. congresswoman, a U.S. senator thrown to the ground and handcuffed on usually specious charges or no charges at all. Well, on Tuesday, they came for a state comptroller and mayoral candidate. Brad Lander, the New York City comptroller who is running for mayor, was arrested on Tuesday by federal agents at an immigration courthouse in Lower Manhattan as he tried to escort a migrant whom agents were seeking to arrest. Lander, a Democrat, was observing proceedings at the city's main immigration courthouse where an increasing number of migrants who appear for court have been arrested in recent weeks by ICE agents. A spokesperson for the Department of Homeland Security later said that Lander had assaulted and impeded a law enforcement officer, similar to false claims that we've seen against other elected officials arrested by DHS. Oh, they were assaulting officials, ICE agents, really? As of Tuesday afternoon, however, Lander had not yet, anyway, been formally charged, according to the New York Times. Video taken by reporters at the courthouse show Lander standing by a migrant man in a hallway on the 12th floor when several men in plain clothes who appear to be law enforcement officers, some of them wearing masks, push past a crowd in the hallway to arrest the migrant. As Lander, caught in the scrum, repeatedly attempts to ask to see a judicial warrant for the man's arrest as he attempts to hold on to him. Agents can be seen trying to pry Lander away from the man before pushing Lander up against a wall by the elevators and placing handcuffs on him. Here's a little bit of what that sounded like on Tuesday.
You have a judicial warrant. Do you have a judicial warrant? Can I see the judicial warrant? Can I see the warrant? I will let go when you show me the judicial warrant. Where is it? Where is the warrant?
I have it in my hand here.
Don't shut it.
I would like to go.
You don't have authority to arrest U.S. citizens.
Sir, you don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens.
You don't have the, I'm not obstructing. I'm standing right here in the hallway. I asked to see the judicial warrant.
You're arresting the
by asking the for a judicial warrant?
You don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens asking for a judicial warrant.
That was New York City comptroller and mayoral candidate Brad Lander. The agents then walked him into an elevator in the building after handcuffing him, accompanied by a member of his security detail. Lander was held for several hours before he was released on Tuesday afternoon, as New York Governor Kathy Hochul and other Democrats had showed up at the federal offices demanding his release. In a statement, Tricia McLaughlin, the spokesperson for DHS, said, quote, "It is wrong that politicians seeking higher office undermine law enforcement safety to get a viral moment. No one is above the law," she said. "And if you lay a hand on a law enforcement officer, you will face consequences." Well, at least from the video I saw, Lander did not appear to lay a hand on any officer. They laid hands on him. A spokesperson for the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office said in a statement that the office was investigating Lander's actions, but said nothing about criminal charges, at least not yet. His arrest was the latest in a series of arrests of Democratic elected officials. It came just 5 days after U.S. Senator Alex Padilla, Democrat of California, was shoved out of a room and handcuffed by federal officials after he had tried to question Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, during a news conference. Last month, you'll recall, federal agents arrested Roz Baraka, the mayor of Newark. He was also, at the time, a candidate for New Jersey mayor, and they later charged Representative LaMonica McGivern, both of them Democrats, in connection with a clash outside an immigration detention center in the city, which sounded a lot like what you just heard in New York. And in April, FBI agents arrested a Milwaukee judge on charges that she shielded an undocumented migrant from federal agents in her courthouse. Lander's arrest came a week before the Democratic primary for mayor. That's coming up. The comptroller is running in a crowded field. He's been racing to make inroads against former Governor Andrew Cuomo, currently the front runner, who has led nearly all of the polling. Zoran Mamdani, a state assemblyman, is polling in second place. He and Lander have actually cross-endorsed each other in an election which will be a ranked choice voting election. Mamdani said outside the building, quote, "In this exact moment, New Yorkers are looking to leaders to meet this moment to showcase the courage that is necessary. What Brad did was engage in that very moment of courage. He showed us what leadership can look like." Governor Hochul, a Democrat, was more blunt. "It's BS," she told reporters, using the complete word. She added at a news conference after Lander's release that it was her understanding that the charges had been dropped. Well, we will see. But this is likely only the beginning of the Trump administration's tactics, authoritarian tactics, when it comes to immigration, according to documents recently given by the State Department to Congress regarding its plans for a new Office of Remigration. What does that mean? Well, in short, it means ethnic cleansing, at least if you believe the far-right neo-Nazi folks in Europe who are applauding the Trump administration for what they are doing, even as the American people do not seem to like it at all. That story and Wired's David Gilbert join me next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. It was once thought that while Donald Trump's popular support was iffy on a number of issues, underwater on most of them, at least when it came to his signature issue, immigration, he had very strong support from the American people. After a campaign in which he ran on promises of swift and mass deportation of undocumented migrants, which he gleefully and cruelly describes as illegal aliens. He also falsely claimed repeatedly, by way of contrast with actual long documented facts, that they brought massive crime to the country, even though decades of evidence proves otherwise, that crime levels are far higher among American citizens than among the immigrant population. Nonetheless, cracking down on immigration was his signature issue. According to a February survey from the Pew Research Center, just after Trump took office for a second time, the overall view of Trump's immigration policy was very positive. At the time, almost 60% of U.S. adults told Pew that they either strongly approved or somewhat approved of, quote, increasing efforts to deport people living in the U.S. illegally, unquote. But as the White House began to put its more aggressive tactics into actual play, including more immigration and customs enforcement raids and snap deportations to El Salvador, well, views on immigration among the American people began to shift. Quinnipiac University recently released a poll conducted from June 5 to June 9, right as the LA protests were peaking in terms of coverage. Only 43% of those surveyed approved of Trump's handling of immigration issues, with 54% disapproving. The most telling data, though, may come from examining Trump's approval rating over the last few months. AP, which also had its poll in the field from June 5 to 9, found that 46% of respondents approved of Trump's handling of immigration, marking a 3-point drop from its polling in late March and early May, when he was polling around 49%. The Washington Post and George Mason University found last week that only 37% of those who responded to its text message-based poll approved of, quote, the way President Trump is handling immigration enforcement, including deportations. Perhaps even more telling is a new poll from Reuters Ipsos released Monday this week showing Trump's approval rating on immigration has softened to just 44% from 47% in mid-May. Unlike other surveys, this one was conducted June 11 to 16, so that encompasses the aftermath of the LA protests and the deployment of the military here in L.A. and the lead up to last weekend's No Kings protests. No, Americans have not responded positively to Trump's deployment of troops and militarized immigration crackdowns in Los Angeles. Evidence suggests just the opposite. Meanwhile, out here in Los Angeles, those crackdowns are having a chilling effect not only on the immigrant community, but on businesses from farms to restaurants and beyond, with some facing collapse as workers are afraid to even show up for work for fear that they may be rounded up at their workplace. Fruits and vegetables are rotting in the fields without enough workers to pick them and being thrown away at markets where local businessmen compare the moment to the ghost towns that they survived during the COVID pandemic. Juan Ibarra, according to a report today from Reuters, a naturalized citizen who pays $8,500 a month in rent for his outlet in an LA fresh produce market, where he sells grapes, pineapples, melons, peaches, tomatoes, and corn, he usually takes in about $2,000 on a normal day. Now it's $300 if he's lucky. Shortly before he spoke to Reuters, he had, for the first time since the ICE raids began, been forced to throw out rotten fruit. By the way, he has to pay a garbage company $70 a pallet to do that. It's happening across Los Angeles and California. Other business owners and experts say, and threatens to significantly damage the local economy. A third of California's workers are immigrants, and 40% of its entrepreneurs are foreign-born, according to the American Immigration Council. The Trump administration, concerned about the economic impacts of his mass deportation policy, claims to have shifted its focus in recent days, telling ICE to pause raids on farms, restaurants, and hotels. Supposedly, with Trump seemingly conceding that the raids were very damaging, at least to farmers who helped to put him into office and to his close friends in the leisure industry. Friends, for example, like his sons, who manage Trump's hotel and restaurant businesses around the country.
Our farmers are being hurt badly by, you know, they have very good workers. They've worked for them for 20 years. They're not citizens, but they've turned out to be, you know, great. And we're going to have to do something about that. We can't take farmers and take all their people and send them back because they don't have maybe what they're supposed to have, maybe not. People don't. They've been there for 20, 25 years, and they've worked great, and the owner of the farm loves them and everything else. And then we can't do that to our farmers and leisure, too, hotels. We're going to have to use a lot of common sense on that.
Use a lot of common sense on the policy that, well, many had urged him to use common sense on long ago. But whatever common sense Trump claimed he planned to use last week, well, that appears to have been very short-lived. Those remarks were from last Thursday. By Sunday night of this week, his tune seems to have changed in what could arguably be characterized as a tantrum, perhaps in angry response to a uniformly lackluster military birthday parade on Saturday, coupled with millions of Americans turning out for peaceful, joyful, no kings, anti-Trump demonstrations in just about every city around the nation on the very same day. Trump took to social media on Sunday night for a long, rambling post in which he seemed to backtrack on his common sense comments from just days earlier. Quote, ICE officers are herewith ordered by notice of this to do all in their power to achieve the very important goal of delivering the single largest mass deportation program in history, he ranted, making no distinction for those who have worked for 20, 25 years in certain industries, nor whether those to be deported had criminal histories or not. Quote, in order to achieve this, we must expand efforts to detain and deport illegal aliens in America's largest cities, such as Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York, where millions upon millions of illegal aliens reside. These and other such cities are the core of Democrat power center, where they use illegal aliens to expand their voter base, cheat in elections, and grow the welfare state, robbing good-paying jobs and benefits from hardworking American citizens. Now, we discussed that part of his rant a little bit on yesterday's show, but migrants do not take jobs from hardworking American citizens. They take jobs that Americans will not. They do not grow the welfare state. They expand the economy enormously, and they pay into social safety net programs like Social Security without taking anything out. They arguably subsidize such programs for American citizens. And of course, they do not vote, much less cheat in American elections. Yet Trump, or whoever wrote this post for him, it had excellent grammar and many complete sentences, you know, over its many long paragraphs. He used this tantrum to target, quote, radical left Democrats who he said are, quote, sick of mind, hate our country, and actually want to destroy our cities. All of that, as obnoxious as it is. Well, that was hardly a surprise coming from Donald Trump, but it went from obnoxious to disturbing for those of us paying close attention to his language when he noted, quote, I want our brave ICE officers to know that real Americans are cheering you on every day. I have directed my entire administration to put every resource possible behind this effort and reverse the tide of mass destruction, migration, that has turned once idyllic towns into scenes of third world dystopia. Our federal government will continue to be focused on the remigration of aliens to the places from where they come and preventing the admission of anyone who undermines the domestic tranquility of the United States. Coming at the end of that long late night Sunday rant focused largely on revenge against Democrats, it seems few noticed his use of that word, remigration. Most in the U.S., including myself, had never heard that word until recently, but it seems to have a very specific meaning. And coming from the President of the United States, it seems Americans and the media should be paying attention, paying much, much closer attention, as noted by Wired's David Gilbert, who wrote about exactly this in late May. As part of sweeping reorganization of the State Department, Gilbert reported, the Trump administration is creating an Office of Remigration. Remigration, he says, is an immigration policy embraced by extremists that calls for the removal of all migrants, including, quote, non-assimilated citizens, with the goal of creating white ethno-states in Western countries. The details of the plan are contained, he reports, in a 136-page notification document sent by the Department of State to several congressional committees. for approval by those committees by July 1, according to a copy reviewed by Wired. According to the document, quote, the Office of Remigration will serve as the Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration's hub for immigration issues and repatriation tracking. It will provide a policy platform for intra-agency coordination with DHS and other agencies on removals, repatriations, and for intra-agency policy to advance the president's immigration agenda. The document was first reported on by Reuters and The Handbasket. It also outlines dramatic changes to the U.S. diplomatic services, including the elimination of much of the Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor Bureau, and the addition of new deputy assistant secretary position to oversee, quote, democracy and Western values, unquote. So this appears to be a major effort, receiving very little coverage or attention right now, particularly since, according to the document, the State Department is, quote, notifying Congress of its intent to reorganize the department's domestic operations, including more than 300 bureaus and offices as part of this effort. Joining us now is David Gilbert of Wired, which has offered some masterful reporting, frankly, across the board in Trump's second term. Gilbert covers disinformation and online extremism for Wired and much more. He previously worked at Vice News and joins us today from his home in Ireland. David Gilbert, thank you for staying late on the job out there tonight to join us on today's broadcast, sir.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So remigration, from the little I have learned about the word in recent weeks, about this concept in general, David, is that it seems to be a code word sort of among the far right neo-Nazi parties in Europe for ethnic cleansing. Is that an accurate reading? What can you tell me about the general idea of remigration and how it's different, if it is, from Trump's simple promise of mass deportation?
I think that sums up remigration quite well. It's a concept that came about first, or was floated first, by French identitarians around 2010, 2012. And it didn't really get much pickup at the time. It was kind of couched or centered in the Great Replacement conspiracy theory, which posits that, you know, mass migration from third world countries is happening to take over white people from Western countries. And it, I suppose, the idea was percolating among far-right groups in Europe for many years. And it didn't really get any pickup until maybe 3 or 4 years ago, when an Austrian activist known as Martin Sellner, who was a member of a neo-Nazi party when he was younger, he sprayed swastika in a library when he was 17. And he decided, he picked this up. He found this idea of remigration, which basically says that every single migrant, even if they are a citizen, needs to go back to their country of origin. And he picked up on this idea and he ran with it. And it took some time, but over the last couple of years, it really, really has gained traction among far-right parties in Europe, in particular in Germany, with the Alternative for Germany, the AfD, who are now the second biggest party in Germany, with the Homeland Party in the UK, who have kind of remigration as their core foreign policy, and Austria's Freedom Party, which is a far-right party as well. There's been marches across Europe, remigration marches. Here in Ireland, we've had them, in the UK and France and Germany and Italy. So it's really, really been growing. And it's something that a lot of people in Europe are focused on. And it was a stated goal from Sellner that he wanted the US to embrace this, because he felt that if the US embraced it, then it would boost the idea globally and would make it easier for it to be adopted in Western country or in European countries. And so when Trump announced that they were going to open an office of remigration in the State Department, I was speaking to Martin Sellner and he was ecstatic. He was overjoyed that Trump had embraced this far-right extremist policy.
He also told you, according to your reporting, that he had seen a lot of what Trump had done so far, what the administration had done, as really already a type of remigration. Trump's using that app, that CBP One app, instead for setting up, you know, meetings with migrants coming to the U.S., using it to help self-deport them and pay them money to leave. That's all part of this idea of remigration, is it not?
Absolutely. Like, Sellner had, he actually made those comments to me a couple of weeks before the Office of Remigration announcement was made, mm-hmm. or that we reported on it, because I was talking to him and I said, like, Trump had mentioned remigration in a single post on social media in September before the election. And that was boosted again by Stephen Miller, who is kind of the architect behind all of Trump's immigration policies. Mm-hmm. They were two mentions of remigration. And from then on, I was tracking it very closely to see, was that something he had just picked up on and decided to use the word and didn't really know what it meant? Or was this really going to be their policy? And if you looked at what they've been doing since Trump was inaugurated in January, it absolutely follows what Martin Sellner's plan is on his remigration website. If you look, it's three phases of a plan. It's a 30-year plan, but they match almost identically with what Trump and his administration did. As you said, it includes, you know, stopping the invasions. That means closing the border. It means paying people effectively to go back to their countries, which Trump is doing already. And it, you know, they want to get people to self-deport, which is something that's already happening. So it's incredible how closely it hones to Sellner's plan. The fact that the administration, we can't say for certain if they were looking at that and deciding that this is what they want to do, or if they did it off their own back. But it's the fact that it is so closely resembling remigration just shows how extreme the Trump administration's immigration policy is today.
And it certainly would seem that with Stephen Miller using that word last September and now sort of heading up this this quota scheme to get 3,000 migrants a day out of the U.S., you know, it would seem that he knows exactly what this remigration is all about. I have trouble believing that's a coincidence. But until this past Sunday, it seems Donald Trump has not used that word since he used it one time in that one post that you mentioned last September. I suspect you noticed it probably jumped out at you on Sunday if you saw that post. Has he used it throughout his presidency until this past Sunday? And what does that mean that it suddenly popped out again this weekend?
He hasn't, like, and as I say, I've been very closely following it. I have a lot of alerts set up to tell me when he uses these phrases. And yeah, as far as I can tell, he hasn't used it explicitly. Now, as we said, the State Department sent that 136-page plan, which did include an Office of Remigration. And you would imagine, given that he is the president, he would have at least seen that. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't read it. Who knows? But I think what is telling, and you made this point in your introduction, Brad, is that the post that he put up on Truth Social on Sunday was long, was full of complete sentences with proper syntax and correct spelling and no grammatical errors and no all caps. So I get the sense that that was something that was written for him. And it sounds very much like something that Stephen Miller may have written, because I absolutely agree with you. I think there is no way in the world that Stephen Miller does not understand what remigration is, mm-hmm. and does not know explicitly what it means and its stated goals and its stated aims. So I think that if you ask Trump at a press conference tomorrow, or when he's talking to the press, if a journalist asked him what is remigration, I don't really think he would be able to give you in detail what it means. Mm-hmm. But if you ask Stephen Miller the same thing, he would be able to cite you chapter and verse, I'd imagine, about what the aim is. And it seems to me that with this sped up cycle of looking for, you know, that Stephen Miller is demanding these huge numbers of deportations every day, uh-huh. that they seem to be speed running Martin Sellner's 30-year plan to try and get it done as quick as possible, possibly within the 4 years of Trump's second term.
And then, you could probably make that excuse for Donald Trump. Oh, he doesn't really know. If anybody asked him what is remigration, he would say, oh, it's exactly what it sounds like, remigration. And then we would move on to something else. But then you get guys like Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and this is a 136-page, I think you said, a plan from the State Department to restructure the State Department. And while I can easily envision Stephen Miller coming up with that restructuring, it seems to me that Marco Rubio at least would have to come to understand what all of this means. He, as I understand it, has slammed Germany, which knows a little bit about right-wing extremism, for labeling the far-right AfD party that you mentioned, David, which embraces the remigration concept. Germany has labeled that party a, quote, confirmed right-wing extremist group. What should we take from the idea that Marco Rubio must have signed off on this document sent to Congress and that he is attacking Germany for, you know, identifying this far-right neo-Nazi party as a far-right neo-Nazi party?
Yeah, he absolutely did. And he wasn't the only one. Lots of people on the American right were criticizing that decision by the German intelligence services, even though the German intelligence services have been monitoring this party for the best part of a decade, and they're well aware of exactly what they're doing, and it's documented evidence of being an extremist party. But that aside, the fact that Rubio is, you know, overseeing this department and has to be overseeing the massive restructuring, because it's the Office of Remigration, obviously, is what I focused on in this, but there's sweeping changes which are going to undermine, you know, civil rights and a whole host of other things that the State Department had been doing, but will now no longer do, or do at a much smaller capacity. So he is overseeing that, effectively a root and branch reorganization of the State Department. And whether he's doing it because he's been told to do it, or it's because he thinks that's the best thing for the country, he hasn't really said. But he has to be able to, he cannot distance himself from this. He has to stand over it because it's his department. This is his plan. And I think it's just symptomatic of what we're seeing across the government, where the Project 2025 handbook that was published by the Heritage Foundation and a host of other partners prior to the election is being implemented step by step. On one tracker online, nearly 50% of the stated goals of Project 2025 have either been achieved or are in progress of being achieved. So it's happening really quickly. And everything that happens at the State Department is part of that plan. And so we're seeing it across the government where cabinet members are simply putting this plan into place. Now, whether they agree with it or not, we don't know, but none of them are pushing back. They're all implementing it as they're being told. And I think Rubio is exactly like that. And his criticism of the AfD is just, you know, part of that whole thing, I think.
There's one point that we sort of ran over here at the top of our conversation, David Gilbert. In your report at Wired, you use quotes around the phrase non-assimilated citizens in your lead describing the meaning of the word remigration. So does the State Department document discuss actually removing citizens, presumably naturalized citizens, as well, if they are not assimilated enough into American culture? Is that something that is actually discussed by the Trump administration, or is that just a sort of a general tenet of remigration that we can assume is on the way?
That is a tenet of remigration. The idea, like, that in various phases, what you will see is that initially you will deport the criminals, illegal migrants who have criminal records, which is what Trump initially was focusing on. Then you will deport the migrants who have been here for 20 years but came here initially illegally, which is what they're talking about now in terms of the farm workers, because he's gone back on that again. He wants them gone. So although by the time this goes out, who knows what the policy will be. But that's the next step. And then the third step is to look at citizens and if they haven't been assimilated. Now, what that means is not very clearly defined, but when you look or listen to what Martin Selner and other far-right extremists in Europe talk about when they talk about remigration, it clearly means people who are not white, who are not Christian, and who do not conform to their view of what a Austrian or a German or an English person should be. And typically that is just, it's effectively, if you talk to some researchers, they say it's just another word for ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
Because they are just going to wipe out whole or deport whole hosts of populations just because of the way they look or because of their religion.
Yeah, your reporting cites Wendy Villa, the head of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, calling the use of the word by the State Department outrageous, saying it's no hiding from the fact that the goal is ethnic cleansing. It's a terrible day for our country when re-migration proponents are crediting the U.S. and Trump administration for normalizing the term. Given your coverage of online extremism, David, and being based in Europe yourself, what has been the reaction among the far right out there or even here to the disclosure from your reporting and Reuters reporting that the State Department plans to open this so-called Department of Remigration?
In Europe, they are jubilant. They're ecstatic. They believe that it is going to open the floodgates effectively for many more countries in Europe to adopt openly racist immigration policies like remigration. In the UK, for example, a lot of parties there now are much more openly endorsing this idea, whereas before they may have couched it in more in language that was a bit more appealing to the masses. But they are effectively, they think that this, because Trump has done it, it gives a green light for everyone else to do it. And Selner himself, who is currently not allowed travel to the US, even though his wife is American, he's banned from traveling to the US because a few years ago, he was investigated for being in contact and communication with the man who shot over 50 people at Christchurch mosques in New Zealand. And so when that investigation was happening, his visa was cancelled and it's never been brought back. But when I speak to him now, he is, I don't want to say supremely confident, but he is pretty certain that he is going to get a visa back and be allowed to enter the States where he can spend a lot of time traveling around, speaking to people and talking about remigration.
Brother.
It's a bit, yeah, it's a bit different in the US. I think like a lot of people, this has kind of passed people by, the idea of remigration. I think because the term is so, it just seems so innocuous. It doesn't initially stand out as something that's extreme. That people have kind of, oh, well, that's just a term for what he's going to do. It doesn't really mean anything. So I think even among, I haven't at least seen a huge wave of far right groups in the US kind of suddenly become proponents of remigration. Obviously, some of them have, and they think it's great, but there hasn't been that wave of excitement because I think so far, people still don't really get it. They like what they're seeing in terms of the mass deportations, or at least the talk of mass deportations. But I think it will eventually kind of creep in once more people start using the term. I think it will become something that is just part of their core belief that remigration is the only way that they can get their country back.
I think it's important that people understand that remigration is ethnic cleansing, even among the far right who see it that way, but are probably smart enough to realize, well, ethnic cleansing is, you know, doesn't poll all that well, whereas remigration, that sounds reasonable. David, I noted lastly here, I noted at the top of the segment here how much Trump's mass deportation promises were initially popular, but have seemingly become much less so in recent months, perhaps at least among the not far, far right in this country, according to a whole bunch of polling out here. Is there any reason to believe that this remigration framing will somehow make these policies overall more popular among the American people rather than less so, as the American people seem to not like what they are currently seeing now?
It is really hard to know, but I think it works both ways in the fact that, you know, you were saying that a lot of people don't understand what remigration is and how it's effectively ethnic cleansing. But the people who are now critical of Donald Trump's thing also don't know probably what remigration means, or a lot of them don't. So they won't really see what's happening and connect it to remigration. So I don't think the rebranding of what he's doing as a remigration policy is really going to work. I think ultimately what Trump seems to be running into, at least, is the fact that the reality is that his kind of ham-fisted efforts to deport so many people so quickly means that citizens and legal migrants are getting caught up in the wave. And like, no matter how much of a Trump supporter you are, if your family is being deported when they shouldn't be, you're going to be angry. And the more that happens, and it's just going to continue happening, the more the anger is going to grow. And he's stuck between a rock and a hard place, because the far, far right, who want remigration, who want everyone gone instantly, aren't happy because there isn't enough people going. Whereas his more centrist supporters aren't happy because some of their families or friends or people they don't necessarily think should be deported are being deported. And he's trying to find a balance there where he's trying to keep everyone happy. And ultimately, he won't be able to do that. So it's going to come down to, is he going to listen to Stephen Miller and go to the extreme and implement remigration no matter what? Or is he going to pull back like he tried to do last week, but then flip-flopped again? Yes. So it's, I think we're going to go back and forth and back and forth for a while on this before he finally decides what to do, or he decides to pick whoever he wants to listen to, whether it's Stephen Miller or someone more sane.
Yeah, it was a remarkable ping-ponging between last week's, we need to take care of the farms and the restaurants and the hotel business and the people who have been here working for 20, 25 years, as compared to what we saw on Sunday night in that long rant. David Gilbert, thank you in any event for making all of this much more understandable with your coverage of remigration. Your coverage is excellent. It's important. I don't think enough folks are paying attention to it, but I hope you will continue to bang that drum, and perhaps with Trump's use of the word again on Sunday, others might take notice and report on it as well. David Gilbert is a reporter at Wired, covering disinformation, online extremism, and how those two online trends impact people's lives. I will link to his article called "The Trump Administration Wants to Create an Office of Remigration" over at Wired.com when I post today's show at Brad Blog. And you can find David on the blue skies at David Gilbert. Thank you for staying up late for us out there in Ireland, sir. It's greatly appreciated. I think you're terrific, and you can expect to be bothered by us again in the near future.
Great. Thanks for having me, Brad.
You bet. Thank you, David. Okay, I got to get out. Thank you, Desi Doyen, yes, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That made possible by those of you who hit a donate button there, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.